There we go. Welcome to Cozy Witch, which is what I'm calling the Let's Talk kind of IRL, real me kind of stuff. No characters, just me. Yeah. So I want to do more of these like cozy, whispery kind of recordings about random thoughts and whatnot. So if you don't have the Patreon mobile app, which I know a lot of people don't like to clutter up their devices with apps and stuff, but there is a, what is it called? A community like chat section only available for some reason on the mobile app. So on the mobile app, I have a few different community tabs. So also apologies if you can hear the traffic outside. I'm not gonna do any editing on this. I want this to be a more realistic I was trying to think of that word that means like stream of consciousness, but I couldn't think of it. So you get to experience my real-time ability to remember words. Anyways, so there's a community tab on the Patreon app that gives these little chats. So I have one called Cozy Witch, where I'm asking for topics for these audios. One that's like updates and news on upcoming audios or anything like that. And then one called Spicy Witch, which is for basically so I can farm your fetishes and kinks and fantasies. Okay? So hopefully you're making use of that because I would like to create the content that the people want to hear. So before we get into that, let's talk about the content that I make. There's been some conversation about like what kind of content I make, what kind of content I could make, should make, etc. And then so I want to talk about a little bit about my ethos. I don't know. My goals and thoughts and like what I'm trying to do, basically. My whole thing is that I want to make cozy, intimate, terrifying, arousing, comfortable content for everyone. So with that, I'm very specific with my writers, how I prefer to write things. My idea is that the listener is genderless and therefore can be anybody. So the way I do that is FRA content, right? And I'm actually very specific. I try not to use they, them pronouns. And this is a specific thing for me because I equate they, them pronouns with someone who's non-binary. Like to me, like I know in conversation, I'd be like, oh, my neighbor, they gave me a gift. I get that. But when I listen to an audio and I hear somebody described as like they, them, I think of like a non-binary person. So the way I write scripts and the way I instruct my script writers is, and this is like a secret, is to not use any pronouns. So that's why we tend to refer to listeners as like little one or good pet or human or prisoner. I don't know. There's a lot of different things. So basically like give the listener a title and that's how I refer to them. And that works for me and I enjoy that. As far as the kind of content, I look for scripts that kind of push gendered roles kind of to the side I think it's important. Like, okay, I've had scriptwriters come into my server before, be like, oh, hey, I write scripts, but I only write M for F, or I only write M for A. And what's happened in those instances is I've been like, hey, send me the script, because chances are I'm going to like it, because chances are if you wrote it for a male voice, I'm going to enjoy it. Just the energy behind it or whatever is going to feel a little more dominant or a little more aggressive or a little more whatever it may be. And the way I see it, like a good script that's like F for A or M for A probably could be read by a female or male VA. Like, it doesn't matter that much. So that's my previous experience with like scriptwriters coming into the server. I do work with a few regular scriptwriters, and I am pretty specific as far as the fact that like I want like a 4A content, and I don't want any pronouns and that kind of stuff. And the only time I deviate from that is if there is talk about getting the speaker character pregnant. And personally, like, that's the only time I deviate from that. If it's like, give me a baby or something like that. And otherwise, I try and keep it for A, because I think the idea of making content that anyone can latch on to and see themselves in that position is, that's important to me. It's just always been that way. And I think it's because, like, when I started listening to content, I would just find the stories I liked. And it gets very frustrating if you see, like, a thumbnail with a story that you're like, ooh, I want to be in that story. And then you listen to it and you're like, that's not me. This feels weird, you know? Like, I feel like the listener characters will do things that y'all would not do. Like, I'm assuming you're not going to wander into a cave in order to, like, meet a Lamia, but actually, that's kind of understandable. So I don't know, maybe like you're not gonna willingly sign your soul away to a demon, or I mean, I hope, I don't know. Anyways, that's my thought. My tagline for my channel has been for a very, very long time, monsters and magic. Oh crap, now I can't remember. Hold on. Let's look at my card. Oh my gosh. This is embarrassing. Like, knowing that I'm not going to do any editing on this is so fucking embarrassing, because you get to hear literally me being like, wait, I need to go type this. Let's see. Okay. Yeah, so it's Maidens, Monsters, and Magic for All. And the type of characters, I just list monster girls, cryptids, experimentals, and eldritch abominations. And that kind of sums up, like, most of the things. It doesn't add in, like, the evil queens or the sorceresses or whatever. But to me, those are kind of monster girls, right? Anyways, that's my thoughts on that. Next thing, let's see. I'm going to pull up the list of things that you guys suggested. And also plug in my phone, because I have 1%, because that's who I am. So hold on. Let's see. Being comfortable in one's own skin. And treating oneself with compassion. Finding beauty and sexiness within oneself. Seeking self-affirmation. To me, those are all kind of one thing. So we're going to talk about those as like a total picture. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a therapist. I'm not licensed in any way. The closest I think I have as far as like professional experience is I've taught drama therapy. When I was in university, I taught drama therapy and did drama therapy, like therapeutic drama exercises at a woman's transitionary home, meaning like women who had recently got out of prison or jail and were placed in a group home setting. And this was not like a court mandated kind of thing. It was something entirely voluntary that as like nearby university we offered to this women's home. And I would go in and the typical, like the average kind of tenant or guest that was staying at this group home setting was usually like a woman in her like late 20s to like early 50s probably. And these were women who had been obviously like incarcerated. A lot of them had children, especially like very young babies that were staying with them at this group home. And they were here as, I mean, I don't know the details. A lot of them had substance abuse problems, things like that. Or they had like a violent history with either like the being the victim of abuse or having been the perpetrator of something violent. So these were on the most part, they were very excited to do something different and do something new. They weren't required to do it. It was like they could get up and walk out of the room at any time. But a lot of them were really excited to be there and to like go through these exercises with us. But they were also, because of their history, very closed off, very like defensive. They could be aggressive at times. So like these women would, for the most part, they were great. Love them. I never really had like a bad experience. There was like a handful of experiences where it was confrontational, I guess is the best word. I was going to say combative, but that seems too excessive. No, it's like confrontational. So these were women that had like self-esteem issues and like substance abuse issues and, you know, the all of the like psychological impact that come from somebody who's been in any kind of judicial system. Like some of them were like foster women, you know, so lots and lots of different types of people kind of going through the same thing with very different backgrounds, you know, but a lot of similarities. So what we did with these women is we gave them these little like acting exercises, like the kind of things that you would do as like a warm-up as a professional actor or like in an academic setting. So we would go through these like warm-up exercises, and then we would do some like more specific like higher level academic theatrical exercises. It's called like Meisner technique. Don't worry, we won't get into it. It's a lot. But what we ended up giving this woman, like the big thing that, and it's a thing that I wrote about as a part of my like experience graduating as a graduate from this program, is I wrote about how we gave them a safe environment in order to express emotion, and even like emotion that was like could be traumatic or dramatic or confrontational. So we allowed them to express like frustration and anger and fear and sorrow and all of those basic, even lust, all of those basic like human emotions that they either in their daily lives didn't have a safe way to express those. Like I can tell you as somebody who's been with an abusive partner, having a safe place, a safe way to express fear and frustration and anger is so therapeutic. Because like when you're with somebody who's abusive or you're in a situation that's abusive or toxic, you can't express emotions like that as easily because there's fear of repercussions, or there are repercussions. So we gave them that. Basically set up an environment where they got to be creative, they got to express themselves, and they got to learn about themselves. And that came more with like the Meisner technique, which is, I'm not going to get into it. I have to keep telling myself that because I will like ramble like forever about, like theater and acting and human communication, stuff like that. I know I can be a bit of a dumb bitch sometimes, but I do have a lot of training in this kind of stuff, and it is something that I enjoy and something that I find extremely valuable. So what I learned from that relates to like self-care and like the self and all that stuff is that you have to work on yourself, and it is an ongoing, ever-present thing. I don't know anybody who's at a point in their life that they're like, yeah, I've got everything under control and I feel great. And da, 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 da. Like everybody has these like philosophical questions about like who they are, what they're here to do, what they're doing, what is the purpose, what is the point. And all that stuff. And then you add on top of that, like the imposter syndromes and the fear and all that stuff. One piece of really good advice that I got at university was that guilt is an indicator that you are in the past. Your thoughts are with the past, and fear is an indicator that your thoughts are with the future. And that if you are in the moment, in the present, and you are present with what you are going through right now, what you're experiencing in that moment, whether it's reading a book or laying in bed or listening to an audio or at work or having a conversation with a friend, if you're present in that moment, then you don't feel guilt or fear. And I've done a lot of things in the past that I learned from, but I don't feel guilt over them. I don't feel guilty about whatever. It's just I try and apply that to what I do in the moment by just learning from it, not repeating the same mistakes, but I do. Everybody does, you know? And then like the fear thing is the thing that I struggled with for a really long time, and still somewhat struggle with. I have really, really bad anxiety. I get anxiety attacks that can be triggered by all kinds of little tiny things, and I have like an emergency medication kind of thing that I can take when that stuff happens. For like the longest time, until I was like an adult, I did not know that I was having anxiety attacks. I think I thought I was just really sad. Like I would be like, oh, I'm really sad right now and I can't control it. And I just never realized that that was an anxiety attack. So talking to a doctor about that was super helpful. Getting the emergency medication for when it pops up, super helpful. Doctors, like good doctors, they will give you knowledge. And I think that's like the most important thing is like they will give you knowledge on what you can do, like strategies for like how to manage like symptoms and strategies for how to manage like those moments where things like pop up. And that is like so fucking helpful. So as far as like loving yourself and getting comfortable with yourself and things like that, a part of it, like these are all just bits of advice, you know? Nobody's gonna have a fully formed answer. And anyone who says they have, like, the answer to how to solve your problems, they're selling you something, okay? So anyone who's, like, worth it, they're just going to give you tools and advice and ideas. And you just have to go and try it. That's all. You have to try it. You have to put these things into action. Hold on, I'm going to move my mic. Okay, that wasn't too bad. They're going to give you ideas and thoughts and actions that you can take. They're going to put a tool in your toolbox, and then you have to decide to use it. And that can be the hardest part, is deciding when to use a tool and what tool and all that stuff. But it's like if you were put into a room with a bunch of tools and hammers and nails and stuff, like, you would eventually pick things up and try and see, like, what tool does what. Like, if you had never seen a hammer before, right? So it's basically that. So a big part of, like, self-growth is you. Okay, I'm gonna give you one of the best pieces of, like, advice, one best saying that I've ever gotten. And it's this thing that I had this acting instructor, and she's brilliant. She's a trans woman. She's been on Amazon Prime shows. She's been on Broadway. She's on Netflix. Like, she's a fantastic woman. And she's actually my former acting instructor. So she has this thing that she says all the time, which is, it's not that we're afraid that we're inadequate. We're afraid that we are powerful beyond belief. Like, we're afraid of our own power. And the way... Okay, so let me unpack that. It's not our inadequacy that we're afraid of, it's our power. And people have, like, humans as a species have this ability where you can basically... Your brain is the thing that controls your life. It controls your thoughts and your actions. Sometimes it doesn't control your mood, you know? And that's just a chemical imbalance in the brain, you know? But you can shape your actions, you can shape your motivations, you can shape your daily life, like, structure your existence in a way that gives you, like, complete control over it. So there's something else we used to say. I'm going to go back to a bunch of, like, theater-related sayings. It's the way you talk about something is the way that it is. And we used to apply this in two ways. The way you talk about your work is the way your work will be. The way you talk about yourself as an artist is the way your art will be and the way you will be as an artist. So, as an example, people who would come into class and they would be like, oh, I'm thinking about kind of doing this thing where I maybe do, like, a representation of what I'm kind of, like, feeling. So that person, you can tell right then, their work is going to be wishy-washy. It's going to be really, like, weak. It's going to have a weak foundation because of the way they're talking about it. They're not talking about it in specifics. They're talking about it in, like, these, like, tentative thoughts. So their work is going to be tentative. It's going to be fragile. The person who comes in and says, I'm making this art piece about this emotion in this way, and like, I'm making a statue about this Greek god, and this is how I associate with them, and I'm going to tell the story of the romance between these two characters as a way to express my own sexuality in this moment. Like, that person, they know what they're doing, or at least they're faking it. But that person, their work is going to be specific. Their work is going to be representational. It's going to do what they set out to achieve. So another example of that is, like, the student who would come in and be like, how do you do your day? And they'd be like, okay, so I wake up and then maybe I'll pull out a book and I'll do some reading and I'll kind of, like, write down, like, what I'm thinking maybe about the, like, I'll reflect on it kind of. Like, they're not going to have as strong of a work ethic, as strong of, like, a result or a process compared to, like, a person who's like, when I wake up, the first thing I do is get a snack, get set up at my desk, and then I pull out my reading for the day, read it, and when I'm done, I jot down these five thoughts. I jot down, like, what did I think? How did it make me feel? Da-da-da. You know, they have specifics. Like, those people are going to have, like, a more specific kind of thing. So how do I apply this to the self and self-improvement and self-image and all that stuff? Think about, okay, like one way, oh man, this might sound bad, but think about yourself as a product. So if you think about yourself as like a product of all of the energy and effort that you put into it, it's like the thing that you get out of the product is what you put into it. It's like the energy you give is the energy you receive kind of thing. So that's one way. And maybe you don't want to think of yourself as a product. That's fine, you know? So I think self-love, self-respect, I think self-love starts with self-respect. Do things that you want to do. Do things that feed your soul, that make you feel good. Be around the people that make you feel good. Consume content that makes you feel good. Consume media that makes you feel good. Don't engage in online debates if it doesn't make you feel good. There's a lot of people out there that will suck up your energy and your time, and if it's not feeding you, it's taking from you, it's eating away at you. So that's how I look at everything. It's like, is this thing feeding me? Like, is this media, is this thing I'm consuming, is this feeding me, or is this taking away something from me? Is it taking my time or my energy? You know? So that's some way to look at it. If that feels too like transactional to you. I saw this post like forever ago, and it was like somebody's like way of managing self-care was imagining that their personhood, their like essence or their soul or however you want to look at, is a demon. So it's like I imagine that my body, this like physical vessel body, is inhabited by a demon, and the demon is powerful. The demon is like the demon like is your personality, and your personality is like powerful, but your body is weak, and it's meat. Your body is a meat bag, like a weak meat bag that's fragile, and you have to take care of it in such specific ways that like the demon doesn't have to deal with. But as the demon, you know that this meat body that you live in, that you inhabit, that you possess, requires water and good food and exercise and social interactions and, you know, self-care, good hygiene, like all this stuff. So it's basically like this idea that like you have to make sure to do all these things for the body that you inhabit, or you're just going to be a powerful demon. And that honestly kind of relates to the previous thought of like, you're powerful beyond measure. Like the human mind is powerful. There's things that you're not going to be able to tackle by yourself. There's things that you're going to need to seek, you know, therapeutic or therapy, like outside, or you're going to have to rely on your support system and all that. But the human mind is so powerful, you know. You get to decide what you do in every single moment. And that's kind of how I went through my like academic life. Like I was an unstoppable goddamn demon when it came to like my theater like career and things like that. It's like I would go home and I would write a script and I'd be like, you know what? We're going to put this up as a play. I'm going to call some friends, and I'd call some friends and I'd be like, hey, I got this idea, and I'd sell them the idea. And we'd get together, we would just start rehearsing, we would find a space we wanted to do this at. We would, you know, I had friends that were in lighting and costumes and set design and all stuff, and I would just be like, hey guys, and I would just sell them the idea of the show and be like, we're all going to share the profit, you want to put this together? And people would be like, hell yeah, let's do it. But all it started with was just the idea of like, I have this story I want to tell. And then everything else would just happen because you will it to happen. You make it happen. You have to. I don't know. That doesn't seem very, I don't know. That's not very useful. So maybe it's not. So here's where I am now. So now in my daily life, I work a job that's more corporate. And I find moments where I'm allowed to be creative. And there are quite a few. I do art and I do video editing and I do web design and all kinds of stuff. So I give myself time and space to be creative. Most of it is business related. It's corporate. You know, we're real estate. We're in capital investments and things that I don't even know, like, the definition of, honestly. So anything. So I'm navigating through that portion of my life right now. And then I have my channel. And my channel, I see it as like, this is my way to be creative. What the fuck does this have to do with self-care? I don't know. To me, like, art and self-care are so tied together. Maybe this will make more sense. When I was 18, I was in an abusive relationship. Trigger warning. I will not go into detail, but I am going to talk a little bit about it. So you might want to skip forward like 30 seconds. So I was in an abusive relationship with a man who was in his mid-30s. And it was primarily emotionally abusive, somewhat physically abusive, and financially abusive. And I got out of that situation. And I know that if I hadn't, I would not be alive right now. But I did get out of it, and I walked away. And I had to make the decision to walk away from the thing that was toxic and harmful. And as like an 19, 20, I think I was 20. I was like 20 at the time. So I was a 20-year-old walking away from that situation after being in an abusive relationship. That was fucking hard. It was hard and it was easy because I was like, all these things were set in place with like the gaslighting and all that stuff. All these things were set in place to keep me locked in that position. But it was also easy because once I made the decision to do it, I did it. And I think that kind of momentum, like, that's a learned skill. And so I'm talking in circles at this point, but something else that we used to talk about. Okay. So there's three ways that like a human feels something. It's like you feel like that we used to talk about, like the head, the heart, and the gut. And your head is the intellectual side of you. And this is like a really good exercise that you can think about, is like, what do you lead with? Are you the kind of person that leads with your head, your heart, or your gut? So the head person is like the analytical, thoughtful, pro versus con, you know, generate a list. Like, those are the kind of decision makers. And the heart person leads with their feelings about things. Like, they lean towards the things that make them happy. They shy away from the things that make them afraid, or they, you know, they just respond with like their emotional side. And then the gut person is the person that relies on like impulse. And I don't know where this came from. I don't think it's a real like philosophical thing, but I don't know. I used to look at looking at a character. Does this character lead with their head, their heart, or their gut? And the gut people, I think, maybe have a little bit of an easier time because they can't seem to come to decisions quicker. And what I've learned is that I'm mostly a head person, but sometimes I act and I respond to stimuli like outside, like concerns or whatever, with like my gut. And it will be like, no, I don't like this thing, I don't want it, we're walking away. And so that was kind of like one of those moments. But I've learned to like kind of tap into the like leading with your gut, leading with your impulse, kind of thing. Maybe there's some people too that like lead with their genitals. Maybe that's a thing. Maybe there's a fourth person that just like follows what physically feels like their lust, you know? Huh. I've never actually thought about that that way. Okay. So now that my phone is charged to 5%, I'm going to unplug it so I can bring it closer. So finding beauty and sexiness within oneself. I think that comes from taking care of yourself. And I don't mean anything to do with like, oh, you've got to look fit and go to the gym and whatever. I just mean physically, like, take care of yourself, you know, like face masks and good hygiene and taking baths and brushing your hair and things like that. Like take the time to put care into your body, like back into your body, like care for your like look at your fingernails. Look at your fingernails right now. Is there dirt under your fingernails? Are they rough on the edges? Like, do you have like polish on your nails? If you're the kind of person that wants polish on your nails, look at your fingernails, you know, look at your skin, look at your hair, like self-care, like beauty to me comes from like, I think of like beauty more as like a garden that you put time and energy into growing and then you're rewarded with like the beauty of a flower, more than like, I think of like beauty as like a statue that you carve away parts of yourself or you buff away like imperfections. I like to think of it like a garden, you know? I think there's so many beautiful people that are not conventionally attractive, you know? And that's something that I've like kind of cultivated with myself. I don't really give a fuck about conventional attraction. I like someone that takes care of themselves and has like a, puts on like a, an image to the world, you know? That their public mask is something that they take pride in, you know? I like to put on a dress and put on some, like, nice stockings and boots and, like, go out into the world. I like people that have, like, a personal aesthetic. It doesn't need to be conventionally attractive. I think the idea of, like, conventional beauty has shifted over time. And I feel like, I think back to, like, movies that take place in, like the past, like movies from like, I don't know, 30s, 40s, 50s, and all this stuff, there was a very obvious like conventional beauty. And then that continued, I think, even into like the 80s, the 90s, like 2000s, like beauty was very like the idea of like beauty, what was beautiful, what was like attractive and handsome was very specific. And I feel like that's shifted and it's gotten to be like a looser definition, you know? Like, I find, like, I don't need a conventionally attractive body in order to be attracted to that body, you know? I like squish. I like some handle to grab onto, you know? I like someone that gives a good hug. I like, you know, I like shoulders and hands. I've always had a thing for like broad noses or like, you know, those ideas of like Roman noses, you know? There's something very like academic and handsome, I think, about like a strong nose. I don't need like a cut jaw or like a tiny waist or, you know, whatever it is to think like this person's attractive. I care more about what they're gonna do with their imagination and their mind than what they're gonna present in front of me as like, this is my canvas, you know? So I think think of yourself in that way is like, think of yourself as powerful. Give yourself the respect that you deserve. Put energy back into like your appearance and your like yourself, your grooming and your self-care and your hygiene, like put that energy in there. And for the love of God, like cook good food. Cook good. I struggled with an eating disorder. I still struggle with an eating disorder. I have a disordered way of eating. And that has been a thing that has I've lived with since I was in junior high, you know, like 10, 11, 12 years old. And it's something I still struggle with, you know, but I think find vegetables that you like, cook them the way you like, cook yourself good food, you know, that's a really, really easy way. It's a difficult task, but it's a really easy thing to do, like to like assign yourself is I'm going to learn to cook good food the way I like, and I'm going to cook food for myself. And that can be a way of self-care for you. So it can be really difficult. It can be like a steep mountain to climb, but there's so much like junky fast food out there that nobody should be eating. Like nobody should be eating. Like you can have that as a treat, you know, every once in a while. You can have some like some junky fast food from like McDonald's even. There's nothing wrong with having that occasionally. Anybody who tells you like no, you should avoid it forever, like they're lying. You can have French fries, you know. I might be a little hungry. I'm starting to think about food. But yeah, you can have a treat, but nobody should be eating that every meal, every day, or even like every day, one meal a day, you know? It's not good for you. And you know that. And the demon that in your personality and your essence knows that. But sometimes the body wants the French fries, you know? So you gotta like fight that out. Okay. What? I had a question a while back. Oh, shoot. It was something like, what fashion do you find attractive? And I think that's really interesting. So, and I kind of want to talk about that. So, I find a wide variety of fashion attractive. I think it's to me like, do you have an aesthetic? Do you have a story that you're telling with how you present yourself? And then just how effectively do you tell that story? I think it's because I have a background in like costume design as well as theater. So what I find attractive is a wide variety of things. Personally, I spent most of my life wearing like head to toe black with boots and like I'm a big fan of turtlenecks. Like it was kind of like a minimalist goth kind of aesthetic for like the bulk of my life. More recently, because I have red hair, more recently I have like kind of fallen in love with like fall colors, and I love things that are kind of like academic looking. Like academia as like an aesthetic, I think is really attractive. You know, I don't need someone to like be super smart at me, but if they're gonna wear like a button up and a sweater vest and like, you know, glasses, oh goddamn, like how hot is that? You know, there's like a nostalgia to it, like hello professor. But then at the same time, I also, and I'm mostly talking about like a male aesthetic or like a male, like a masculine leaning aesthetic. I also, although, actually, fucking scratch that. This also applies to women, like a more feminine like aesthetic. Academia and women. But then I also like a bit of like a lumberjack kind of vibe. Like if you want to be like a blue collar working man kind of thing, I think. As an aesthetic, as like a fashion choice, that's also pretty fucking hot. I like growing up in LA and having like like a very more like a more like queer centric like creative circle that I kind of ran in, people were very specific about like how they dressed and how they presented themselves. And when I moved, because I moved from California to Idaho, for like the longest time, people would be like, oh my God, I love your outfit. And I'd be like, I'm just wearing a dress. Like, there's nothing. Like, it's just, this is just a dress. That's it. I didn't even dress up today. But I would have people be like, oh my God, I love your outfit today. And I'm like, what? So I just remember being like confused by that. And it was like one specific skirt that anytime I wore this skirt, I would have a woman like stop and tell me like, I look, oh, you look so cute. And I'd be like, what? And it was like this one skirt. It was so funny. Or like this one brown sweater, like a chunky brown sweater. So funny. Anyways, I do need to wrap this up. I've got work to get back to and all that fun stuff. But so yeah, I, as far as aesthetics, there's a wide variety of aesthetics I like. I care more that people put time and energy into their body and their outfit and things like that. And again, it has nothing to do with hitting the gym or being a size whatever. It's more like, if you want to wear something comfy that day, make sure it's clean, you know? Clean clothes, clean body, dirty mind. Anyways, that's all I'm going to talk about for today, because it's been, we're approaching an hour. Next week, I'll talk about something else. I'll try and make it something more fun. This one got a little heavy, and that's okay. But if you have ideas for topics and stuff like that, go ahead and drop it in the Cozy Witch chat conversation thingy on the Patreon mobile app. Or you can just DM me directly. That's fine. So next week, let's do something slutty, okay? Next week, send me like a dirty topic. I want to talk about aftercare and like doming, but we don't have to. We can talk about whatever you want, baby. Okay. Anyways, have a good day. Have a good night. Okay. Take care of yourself. Be kind to yourself. Take care of that meat body, because you are an all-powerful demon, but your meat body is fragile. It's very fragile. Okay. So do good things to it. Be nice to it. Okay?